Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Saturday, October 5th. Joining me today are Eric and Kate to discuss a hot topic in nutrition. Let's dive right in, shall we? Today we're discussing the impact of ultra-processed foods on children's health. Recent research shows that 60% of Americans' daily caloric intake comes from ultra-processed foods, with an even higher percentage for kids. Let's dive into the details. Eric, what's your take on this?
Well, Ted, it's a real doozy. I'll tell you that. We're looking at a whopping 70% of kids' diets being ultra-processed foods. That's not just alarming, it's downright scary. We're essentially feeding our kids a steady diet of junk and expecting them to grow up healthy. It's like planting weeds and hoping for roses. This is setting them up for a lifetime of health issues, no doubt about it.
Hold your horses, Eric. You're painting with way too broad a brush there. While the numbers are concerning,
broad brush? Kate, these are cold, hard facts. We're talking about the health of our children here.
Let me finish, Eric. We can't ignore the realities of modern life. Many families rely on these foods due to time constraints and budget limitations. It's not fair to blame parents for making choices that fit their circumstances. We're not all living in a world where we can whip up organic, home-cooked meals 3 times a day.
Interesting points from both of you. Let's dig deeper into the health implications. Kate, what specific health risks are associated with high consumption of ultra-processed foods?
Well, Ted, the list is longer than my grocery receipt. Studies have linked ultra-processed foods to various health problems, including cancer, heart disease, and type 2 diabetes. And it's not just physical health, either. There's a strong connection to declining mental health and well-being in children. It's like we're feeding our kids a ticking time bomb of health issues.
I hate to say it, but I actually agree with Kate on the health risks, but I think we need to emphasize the severity even more. We're looking at the first generation that might have a shorter lifespan than their parents due to nutrition and lifestyle factors. That's unprecedented and frankly terrifying. It's like we're going backwards in human evolution.
While that's true, Eric, we can't ignore the socioeconomic factors at play. Many families don't have access to fresh whole foods or the time to prepare them. It's easy to judge? From the position of
Kate, this isn't about judgment. It's about facing reality. We can't use socioeconomic factors as an excuse to continue down this path. We need to find solutions that work for all families, regardless of their circumstances. The health of our children
Let's talk about the nutritional aspect. Eric, how does the consumption of ultra-processed foods affect children's nutrient intake?
It's a disaster, Ted. Plain and simple, kids aren't getting the vitamins and minerals they need for proper development. Instead, they're loading up on unhealthy fats from seed oils and sugary foods. It's like trying to build a house with cardboard instead of bricks. We're setting them up for a lifetime of health problems. Their bodies are crying out for real nutrients, but we're giving them empty calories and chemical additives.
While I agree that the nutritional profile is concerning, we shouldn't demonize all processed foods. Some fortified cereals and snacks can actually contribute essential nutrients to children's diets.
That's a dangerous oversimplification, Kate. The minimal benefits of fortification don't outweigh the overall negative impact of these foods. We need to focus on whole nutrient-dense options. It's like saying it's okay to eat candy because it has added vitamins. That's not how nutrition
works. Let's put this
works.
In historical context. Can you think of any similar health crises we've faced in the past? Eric, what comes to mind?
Absolutely, Ted. This reminds me of the tobacco crisis in the mid-20th century. For decades, smoking was commonplace and even promoted as healthy. It wasn't until the 1964 Surgeon General's report that we fully recognized the dangers. We're in a similar boat with ultra-processed foods. They're everywhere, marketed as convenient and tasty, but we're only now starting to realize the full extent of the damage they're causing.
That's an extreme comparison, Eric. Ultra-processed foods aren't addictive substances like tobacco. They serve a purpose in our busy lives. You can't equate a bag of chips with a pack of cigarettes.
I disagree, Kate. Many ultra-processed foods are designed to be addictive with carefully calibrated combinations of sugar, salt, and fat. The food industry, like big tobacco, prioritizes profits over health. They're not selling nutrition. They're selling convenience.
But people need
and
to
addiction.
Eat, Eric. We can't equate food with cigarettes. That's absurd and fear-mongering. You're acting like every packaged food is poison. People aren't going to stop eating just because you're wagging your finger.
Interesting parallel, Eric. Kate, can you think of a different historical example that might be relevant?
Sure, Ted. I'd say it's more akin to the Industrial Revolution's impact on diet. As people moved to cities and worked long hours, their diets shifted dramatically. It wasn't all bad. Food became more accessible and affordable for many. We saw innovations in food preservation and production that changed the game. It's not about good or bad. It's about adaptation to new circumstances.
That's a fair point, Kate. But the Industrial Revolution also led to widespread nutritional deficiencies and new health problems. It's a cautionary tale about prioritizing convenience over health. We saw rickets, scurvy,
True.
And other diseases.
But it also spurred innovations in food preservation and distribution that have saved countless lives. We need to find a balance, not vilify progress. You can't just turn back the clock and pretend we're all
balance is key, I agree. But right now, we're far from balanced. We're tipping the scales towards convenience at the expense of our children's health. It's like we're force-feeding our kids junk and wondering
why they're sick. You're oversimplifying a complex issue, Eric. We can't just turn back the clock on food technology and distribution. That's not realistic or desirable. We need to work within our current system to make improvements, not tear it all down.
I'm not suggesting we do, Kate, but we need to be more critical of what we're feeding our kids and make informed choices. It's about education and awareness, not living in the past. We have the knowledge now to do better, so let's use it.
Let's look to the future. How do you see this situation unfolding? Eric, what's your prediction if we continue on this path?
If we don't change course, Ted, we're looking at a public health disaster. We'll see skyrocketing rates of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease in younger and younger people. Healthcare costs will explode, and life expectancy could actually decrease. It's like we're feeding our kids a ticking time bomb and hoping it won't go off. We need to act now before it's too late.
That's an overly pessimistic view, Eric. I think we'll see a gradual shift towards more balanced diets as awareness grows. Food companies are already responding to consumer demand for healthier options.
That's naive, Kate.
It's not.
These companies are masters of marketing. They'll slap healthy labels on the same junk food and call it progress. We need systemic change, not window dressing. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a broken leg.
You're not giving consumers enough credit, Eric. People are becoming more educated about nutrition and making better choices for their families. It's not all doom and gloom. We're seeing real changes in food trends and consumer
Interesting
habits.
Perspectives. Let's consider another potential outcome. Kate, what if there was a major government intervention in food policy?
That could be a game changer, Ted. Stricter regulations on food marketing to children, subsidies for whole foods, and nutrition education in schools could shift the balance. We might see a significant reduction in ultra-processed food consumption within a generation. It's like planting seeds for a healthier future. With the right policies, we could nurture those seeds into a garden of better health for our kids.
I'm skeptical of government intervention, Kate. It often leads to unintended consequences. We might end up with a black market for junk food or see prices for staple foods skyrocket.
That's ridiculous, Eric. We're not talking about prohibition here. Smart policies can guide us towards healthier choices without restricting freedom. It's about creating an environment where healthy choices are easier.
History
and more
shows
accessible.
That government meddling in personal choices rarely ends well. We need grassroots change, starting with education and community initiatives. It's about empowering people, not controlling them.
But those initiatives often lack the resources to create widespread change. Government support can amplify their impact. It's not about control. It's about providing the tools and resources for people to make better choices.
Or stifle innovation and create dependency. We need to empower families to make better choices, not dictate what they can eat. It's about education and personal responsibility, not government handholding.
Well, folks, it looks like we've stirred up quite a debate here. While Eric and Kate may not see eye to eye on the solutions, they both agree that the health of our children is paramount. It's clear that addressing the issue of ultra-processed foods in our diets is crucial for the future health of our nation. Thanks to both our guests for their insights, and to you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Ted, signing off from Listen 2.